gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day, each Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and each Sunday at noon. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
Welcome into The Dean's List. We're going to hit the ground running today. It seems like I'm always behind the eight ball, always running out of time, so we're going to run down the track today. Got Christy Dean with me. We're going to pick up where we left off last time in a very real sense. Welcome, by the way.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, glad you're here. I want to lay out very briefly four Christian views of government in a civil society.
Okay.
All right, and we're going to talk about those things and then answer the question in the end, or basically revolve it around no compromise. What does it mean when Christians say, well, we don't want to compromise? We want to stand for truth.
Right.
Okay? And again, my contention is that if we don't understand how the gospel works in a civil society, then there are many times we're compromising without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences are devastating. Agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Last time we were together, I started from one side. I'm going to start from the other. All right. Here's one view. It's called the pacifist view. And the pacifist view of government for the Christian's relationship to government is sort of, okay, well, let's just don't involve ourselves at all. We're not going to involve ourselves with government. We don't want them messing with us at all.
And it's kind of like hunkering down in a fortress and doing your own thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Sure. And even more extreme than that, in a lot of cases, like the Amish, right? They don't want to pay taxes. they don't want legislation affecting them, etc. Now the question is whether or not the pacifist view is a biblical way for the Christian to approach the civil society in which he or she lives.
I don't think so.
Okay, run with that.
Well, I think based upon Romans 13, you obviously, you still need to pay taxes and you still need to render under Caesar that which is Caesar's. That's in Romans 13, right?
Actually, mentioning paying taxes is in Romans 13, but the whole render unto Caesar thing was Jesus.
Oh, so, yeah, Jesus. That's right.
Okay, good. I'm not sure who your parents are, but
no, that's it. You go ahead.
Okay. No, you're doing well. No. Well, it's not just that, though. I mean, you're right. That is a great starting place. The question is, are we going to just withdraw from society? Well, no. God has put us here. For what reason?
To be salt and light. To be in the world and not of the world. And to transform the culture.
That's right. That's right. How about the dominion mandate? Are you familiar with this? I'm just pulling theological terms out of the air.
Like Genesis 3, yeah. Genesis 2. Subdue the earth and take dominion over it.
Exactly.
And cultivate life.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, implications. We've talked about it before. We don't get bogged down. We're tilling the soil, right? Cultivating life. We're using those resources. We're making technological advance, medical advance, you know, subduing the earth.
Right. And I think that when you read through the New Testament, well, even the Old Testament, but the New Testament especially, you don't see the Christians holding to the pacifist view. You see them in culture, participating with others and influencing them for the gospel.
Sure. God tells the Israelites in Babylon to work for the good of the city, even though Babylon is Babylon.
Right.
Right? Yes, absolutely. So you've got the dominion mandate. You've got the cultural mandate that you mentioned a moment ago. Be salt and light. If the salt loses its saltiness, it's good for nothing but to be thrown on the ground and trampled upon by men. And I think that's what's happening in America.
Right.
Christians and the gospel. It's being thrown on the ground. It's being trampled upon by men, not merely because those who don't love Christ are going to hate Christians, but we've lost our saltiness. We've lost our preserving power, our flavor, partly because we're compromised without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so dominion mandate, cultural mandate, Great Commission, make disciples of all the nations. So Paul speaking to Felix, Festus, Agrippa, John the Baptist speaking to power, right? Wasn't it John the Baptist? Yes, who told Herod, you know, what you're doing is not right. Mm-hmm. They chopped his head off and all that kind of stuff. That was the girl that asked for it. I remember all the details. The point I'm making is, you know, Jesus himself said to the apostles, you're going to stand before kings and before those in authority, and you're going to be witnesses for my name. And we're told to penetrate and permeate every aspect of culture, and the biblical worldview is comprehensive, and it takes into account every aspect. So Christians need to be speaking to politics and public policy and science and education and art, and we need to be doing public policy and science and education and art and building cars and building boats and playing tennis and building economic stability, right? Mm-hmm. All those things.
Well, going back to the views of government, I think that if you, not only in the pacifist view, but also in the theonomous view, we could also be losing our saltiness if we just keep imposing legislation and things like that, because we're relying on those things instead of actually relying on what you're talking about, the cultural mandate, the dominion mandate, etc., instead of relying on those to bring the gospel to bear. So we can maybe even become this caricature of Christianity when we perhaps hold to that other view. So we're also losing our saltiness in that way.
You're absolutely right. Now, what you've done, this is a good thing, but what you've done is rather than run around the track, you ran straight across the middle.
Yep.
Okay, and you came out on the other side, but that's okay. On one end of the spectrum, you have that pacifist view. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the theonomic view. What is theonomy? We talked about it last time, but give it to us briefly.
It's when God, I don't know.
Well, when you do know. You said it. It's when Christians want to legislate. You just said it a moment ago. God's law through the government.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the theonomists, believe it or not, would take the civil law out of the Old Testament, and they would impose it on civil society if they could. If they could. Now, we can get into postmillennialism and rising out of the ashes and all that. I'm just saying that for informed listeners. But for those who are not theonomists, you know, if they had the power, like I said before, they would outlaw Sabbath breakers.
Right.
Well, actually put us to death. They would, because in their mind, I'm a Sabbath breaker, even though I don't believe that I am, biblically speaking. They put to death homosexuals, etc. They don't believe in a free society. In fact, as Gary North, who said, we believe in religious liberty right now because that's the best we can get, but we're going to take that religious liberty and use it until we get the upper hand. And then once we get the upper hand, then we're going to legislate Christianity and impose it on everybody else, and that's what we ought to do. That's the theonomic view. Okay, so one end of the and we don't believe that's right. Why?
Because that's Old Covenant.
Okay, exactly. We're not theocratic Israel.
Mm-hmm.
We're not under the Old Covenant. We're under a New Covenant. That's all that talk about covenants in the previous show. What does it mean to be under the New Covenant? Well, the New Covenant is for believers only. And so we come to realize that the people of God, the church, those who are saved, we're a people within a larger people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to impose Christianity on America, because America and the church are two different things.
Right.
All right.
America's not the city on a hill.
America's not the city on a hill. Perfect. That's what the Puritans thought it was, but it's not. And a lot of dispensationalists, Christians today, think that America's a city on it, but it's not. The church is the city on the hill. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Now, in between those two extremes, you've got closer to the theonomic view, this view that's sort of related to the divine right, the old divine right of kings view, that whatever the monarch says.
Okay. So, like, the Pope would be a good example of that?
Ah, sure, except the Pope is not, you know, the President of the United States or anything like that, but what he says is the law for Catholics, sure. For Roman Catholics, that is. Eastern Orthodox folk would, you know, take exception to that. Anyway, I'm going back to this big schism back in, 10-something. Anyhow, yeah, it's basically, you know, because he's the king, he has a divine right to make the law, and whatever he says goes. And you know what? There are more in the dispensationalist camp, and we don't have time to explain that term, but I guess we should to a certain degree. Fundamental Baptists today, you don't even have to be a fundamental Baptist, but sort of dispensationalism, it has a lot of implications for end times, last days, but implications for salvation. But in terms of government, on the one hand, they have been sort of the withdrawal from culture up until recently. Mm-hmm. The world's a sinking ship. Why in the world would we polish the brass on a sinking ship? So why would we involve ourselves in politics? Mm-hmm. But with the advent of Jerry Falwell, the moral majority, and now you've got the James Dobsons and I don't want to name groups that aren't necessarily right there theologically, mm-hmm. but a lot of the Christian activists today, they fall into this dispensationalist camp. And basically, I heard one on the radio the other day. This is a guy, if I'm not mistaken, is out of the Master Seminary, John MacArthur. Now, I love John MacArthur, but I disagree with him on certain things. But this individual said that we must submit to the government absolutely. Hmm. Now, he wouldn't say that you have to obey. Like, if he would say, well, you know, if they ask you to sin, well, then you don't have to submit. But they would talk in much more glowing terms or much more absolutist terms than I think is biblically warranted when it comes to the issue of submitting to the government. They would interpret Romans 13. You were talking about Romans 13 in a previous segment.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a typical example of Romans 13. A pastor was asked recently, a famous pastor, he's reformed. This is interesting. He's reformed. And he's all in favor of, waving the flag, marrying the church to the flag somehow. And he's all in favor of doing whatever it is that we need to do in Iraq. And somebody asked him a question. He said, do you not think that all of your flag waving within the church and connecting the gospel to war, does that not muddy the gospel somehow, some way? Here was his response. He said, Romans 13 gives us the mandate, the obligation to punish the evildoers. The Iraqis, the Muslims, they're the evildoers. Therefore, through the government, we need to go punish them. That's a divine right of King's view, less than biblical in my estimation. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
Music may be the universal language, but what's being communicated?
Is the music that we're listening to scriptural? We have to say, hey, is this music? Does it want me to get on my knees? Does it make me want to just serve God and glorify Him and being with Him forever?
Joe Schimmel joins us for a conversation about the dangers and delights of music. Next time on Licensed to Parent.
Licensed to Parent every Monday at 11 a.m. on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Sticky Fingers Rib House serves the best St. Louis-style ribs, pulled pork barbecue, and wings, all slow-smoked on site. Established in 1992 in Mount Pleasant, they now have 15 locations throughout the Southeast, including downtown Greenville. Their signature barbecue salsas are served daily, along with their homemade starters, sides, and desserts. They'll also deliver lunch to your office staff, or you can call Lacey Smith at 297-7200 to cater your next special event. Sticky Fingers. Get sticky. Have fun.
North Greenville University and Alex McFarland invite you to hear the best assembly of Christian speakers available anywhere this year at Truth for a New Generation. It's going to be at First Baptist Spartanburg, September 18th and 19th. The theme this year is Jesus, America's Hope. Come hear the Benham Brothers, Lee Strobel, Dr. Alveda King, Will Graham, Dell Tackett, Todd Starnes. Get your early bird ticket prices and get them today by going to truthforanewgeneration.com. That's truthforanewgeneration.com.
Miracle Hill provides a bridge to homeless and hurting children and adults. on Saturday, June 6th. Bring your whole family to Furman University for the annual Interim Healthcare Miracle Hill Challenge. Registration is now open. Choose from a certified 5K run or a 20, 40, 62, or 100-mile ride. And for the kids, a Miracle Mile Fun Run. Register online at miraclehill.org. Miracle Hill Ministries, shelter, food, and miracles. Every day.
Thanks for telling your friends about Christian Talk 660.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. For more resources, including articles, books, and archived broadcasts, simply log on to trueworldview.net. Once again, here's your host for today's edition, Dr. Paul Dean.
Hey, I forgot to mention, I think my daughter's with me today. Maybe I did. Christy Dean.
That's me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not just because you're my daughter that you're in here. You're pretty educated, pretty sharp, pretty theologically informed.
Maybe.
So, yeah, well, it's okay. We like to mix it up a little bit. We've been talking about the four Christian views of government, or the Christian's relationship to government, mm-hmm. our response to government, what government should be in a contemporary civil society. Let's put it that way. We've mentioned the pacifist view, mm-hmm. which basically says we want to just be separate from government as much as possible. We're not going to run for office. We're not going to be involved in politics, public policy. We're out because we're hunkering down. That's pacifism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not strict pacifism, but it's a pacifist view of public policy and government. On the other end of the spectrum, we have theonomy.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to legislate old covenant civil law through the government, right? Ten Commandments, civil law, the whole bit. Okay? Then you have the revitalized divine right of kings view, which basically it's not theonomic per se, but it's like, okay, the government has this authority from God to mm-hmm. uphold God's righteousness. And so, boy, whatever the government says, we better do. And, boy, they're the righteous avengers. They got the sword, so we're going to kill all the evildoers. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you know.
And that comes from an incorrect interpretation of Romans 13 most of the time.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And we're going to talk about that. Because that brings us to the fourth view, which is what I'll call the liberty of conscience view. And basically the liberty of conscience view says, okay, wait a minute. You know, we're not pacifists, so we can't withdraw. We've got, look, you and I said a moment ago, the dominion mandate.
Right, culture mandate.
Great Commission,
mm-hmm.
yeah, salt and light, the whole bit. So we can't do that. We're not theonomous because we're not Old Covenant Israel.
Right.
People
we're the church.
We're the church. And the church in America, I'm just using America because we live here, are two different things. You know, Christians can exist anywhere. Germany, mm-hmm. Japan, France, doesn't matter. So there are other reasons we don't want to impose Christianity on, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we're saying pacifist is wrong. Theonomist is wrong. The whole divine right of kings is wrong. Misinterpretation of Romans 13. What do we say? We're saying, wait a minute. Okay. If the people of God and the country they live in are two different things, if the church and the state are two different things, okay, well, that means something.
Mm-hmm.
If the church and America are two different things, that means something. So the real question then is, okay, well, how do we implement God's law in a new covenant context, in a gospel context, in the larger civil society?
You can't implement God's law on people that aren't God's people.
Okay. Well, I agree with that, but we need to expand that. I mean, we do say thou shalt not murder. We do have laws against murder. Should we have laws against murder or not?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because those are... I don't know.
Oh, you do.
I do. But maybe you should elaborate. Because those are civil issues.
Thank you. That's exactly right. Let me give an illustration.
Well, how do you know that the civil things are the things that you should be implementing and not the moral things?
That's a good question. See, now you're thinking ahead. So hold that thought. Let me address the first issue,
okay.
Then we'll come to that. If you're going to have a civil society, okay, what that means is, people can't kill each other. If you allow people to kill each other, then you wouldn't have a civil society, right?
Right.
So if you want to live without that, that's fine. But we're talking about a civil society. And the question is, okay, how do Christians operate in a civil society? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so murder would be illegal. Can't murder people because then you wouldn't have a civil society.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What about, but we're not outlawing murder simply because God says murder's wrong. God does say murder's wrong. Murder is immoral. So it's a moral issue. But it's not just a moral issue. It's a civil issue. Same holds true for abortion.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that abortion should be outlawed, not merely because God says it's murder, which he does, not merely because it's immoral, which it is, but if you allow abortion in a civil society, you do not have a civil society. You have one segment of the population running roughshod over another segment of the population. That the weaker segment, the babies, they don't have any rights. Yet, our founding documents say that we believe that God has given us certain unalienable rights. To name a few, life, the right to life.
Mm-hmm.
That's not granted by government. That's granted by God. So that's why I say, yes, a biblical worldview for civil society. Yes, let's appeal to God. But the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to the pursuit of happiness. So does that make sense? So
mm-hmm.
So no abortion. But now liberty. See, now you can't put liberty in conflict with life.
The right to life or the pursuit of happiness.
Right. So liberty basically means that we should have, because it's a right from God, not the government. We have the right to do whatever we want to do as long as we don't hurt anyone else.
Right.
Infringe on someone else's liberty.
Well, how do you know that those three things, this is probably way too far afield, but how do you know that those three things are the things that you should be working towards? Right to life, right to liberty.
I am
going to
come to that. Can you hold that question?
Okay.
As it relates to your other question. Let me just finish this thought. That sounds like what I just said, you know, we ought to have the liberty to do whatever we want to do as long as we're not hurting somebody else or infringing on somebody else's liberty. That sounds pretty close to libertarianism, which
mm-hmm.
is what some of our informed listeners are going to say. And I'm going to say, well, you know what? That's absolutely right. Libertarianism flows from a biblical
right.
worldview. And I know a lot of my Christian brothers go, wait a minute, that's totally wrong. Well, see, when libertarians argue for abortion, that's not a true libertarian position.
Because it conflicts with the right to life.
Exactly. Now, they say, well, all you libertarians, y'all just want everybody to run around smoking marijuana. No. Like Gary and I were joking earlier, I don't know if it was on this show or the last show, about, you know, me writing the letter to the editor about not banning alcohol sales on Sunday. That doesn't mean I want everybody to run around drinking alcohol
right.
on Sunday. I don't. What it means is I don't want to impose my moral values through the law. What moral values are we going to impose? I mean, where does it stop? Are we going to say, okay, well, no R-rated movies?
Right.
Wait a minute, no PG-13, because some Christians would legislate differently. Well, let's just make sure everybody dresses modestly. Okay, well, who's going to define modest? The Amish people have a different view of modesty than you do, but you have a different view of modesty than most of the people that live in your neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
thankfully.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. We love them, but they have a different view. So it comes back to, okay, well, what is the role of government in a new covenant context? That's the real issue. And see, well, a lot of Christians say, well, Romans 13 tells us what the role of government is. Romans 13 says government is supposed to, you know, it doesn't wield the sword in vain, stands for God's righteousness, and punishes the evildoers and all that. And I've said this many times. I've said many, many more. Romans 13 is not prescriptive.
It's descriptive.
It's descriptive. It's, you know who the government is in Romans 13?
Nero.
Nero. Now tell me a little bit about Nero.
He was bad.
Bad. Persecuted Christians, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now Paul's saying, this guy is God's minister. This guy is God's deacon, God's servant, for your good. Now again, Wayne Grudem, famous theologian, he interprets that, oh, you see, the government exists for our good in civil society, for the good of society. So let's let the government, you know, do parks and boy, from okay, well, why not the welfare state? But, well, Wayne's probably opposed the welfare state as it is. What's the contradiction?
Mm-hmm.
Here's my point. It's not even what Paul means when he says that Nero's there for our good. What does he mean?
He means like Romans 8:28, I think. All things work together for your good. So this situation is here to make you more like Christ, not necessarily as a good thing. Or like Joseph, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. It wasn't a good thing that his brothers did to him, but it worked out for good.
That's right. That's right. So you got to keep everything in context. And Romans 13 is in the context of Romans as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul's still talking about what God is doing for the good of his people. And nothing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. I'm going back to Romans 8.
Mm-hmm.
He says all things work together for your good. How does he define good? Being sanctified.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're being sanctified, not even death can separate us from the love of God. That's the point. So Romans 13, you got wicked Nero. He's for your good. He's for your sanctification. That's what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question then. Do we have any lengthy teaching or instructions at all in terms of what civil government should be?
Not really.
We really don't. You got the Old Covenant, but that's a theocracy.
Right.
So you can't get your theology of government from the Old Testament. It's not that the Old Testament's irrelevant, right? It's certainly relevant. The principles are there. It's the Word of God. But we're not theocratic Israel. You can get some principles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have anything in the New Testament that says what government ought to be? No. But what do you have in the New Testament?
How to live.
You have things like the fact that people are sinful. Okay, well, you got to keep people from hurting one another. You have issues of freedom. I can't violate someone else's conscience. That's New Testament. I can't impose the gospel on someone. That's New Testament. I can't impose morality on someone. That's New Testament. What do I try to do? I try to persuade. See, the gospel is persuasive,
mm-hmm.
not coercive.
Right.
So you put all that together. You want a civil society? Okay. You recognize there are bad people who would hurt you? Well, you got to do something about that. But yet you got to preserve liberty. That's where I come in and say life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and law that keeps us all in check. Not law that keeps us from violating the liberty of others,
mm-hmm.
hurting others. Not law that makes us conform to some moral code. That's what the church is about.
Right.
It's what the gospel, it's what the Holy Spirit is about. I'm getting wired up and we're out of time. You want to close this out? No? You did a great job. You have to come back, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll talk more about it next time on The Dean's List.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archived broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Join us each week at 11:30 on Friday and Saturday, and noon on Sunday for The Dean's List.
The gospel.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.